last parak that we learned in Rosh Hashanah was a jam-packed parak. Every daf had many, many very famous sugyas and a lot of interesting things to talk about. You're not going to have a letdown because the fourth parak of Rosh Hashanah is just as exciting, and the first amud of the fourth parak in Rosh Hashanah is going to take us a few weeks just to get through this amud. There's so much to talk about, so much to discuss, so let's begin with the Mishnah on Chavtes Amud Beis, where the Mishnah tells us what happens when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos? And are we supposed to be blowing shofar then or not? Is this a din d'oraisa? Is this a din d'rabbanan? All of that and more coming up in the next few weeks. So let's look at the first words in the Mishnah. Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah, Shechalias B'Shabbos. When you have Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos, so B'Migdash, in the Beis HaMigdash proper. Now again, this is going to be a discussion in the Rishonim, which we'll talk about in the coming weeks. What exactly does Beis HaMikdash mean? Does it mean only the Beis HaMikdash, or does Mikdash even include Yerushalayim as well? But be it as it may, leaving that point aside for now, but Mikdash HaYutokin Avalo B'Medina, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, they only blew the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash itself, but not outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Mishachara Beis HaMikdash, once the Beis HaMikdash was no longer around, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai Shiyuhu Token B'chal Makom Shiyesh Bo Bezdin. Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, as we knew, made many takanas. You look throughout Shas and Maseches Sukkah, Maseches Beitzah, you have all scattered about that Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai made many different takanas in order to remind people of what the Beis HaMikdash experience was like, or what we are looking forward to having back once again. So here Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai did the same thing, and he made a takana that any city that has a bezdin in it should blow shofar even when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Lezer, that's not an accurate description of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's takana. Rabbi Lezer limits it and he says, Lo hiskim Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ela b'yavna b'vad. He didn't mean any city that has a bezdin in it is allowed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah shechalias b'Shabbos. All he meant is if you have a city that houses the bezdin agadol like Yavne, that was the major metropolis of the time, that was where the great Talmid HaChachamim lived. Not any ad hoc Bezdin that gets together in any community. It means you have to have a really recognized Bezdin in order to allow yourself to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos. And the Gemara says, no, Amri Lo, that's not correct. Echad Yavne ve'echad kal makom sheyesh bo Bezdin. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's implementation was that this should be done anywhere where there's a Bezdin. Doesn't matter if it's a fancy Bezdin, doesn't matter if it's a simple Bezdin. Either way, you blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos. Now the Mishnah adds, and it says, V'od zos, ha'isa Yerushalayim yiseira al Yavneh. Now, V'od zos usually means, not only that, but also, sounds like it's a continuation of the first part of the sentence, but here, Rashi points out from the Gemara that this doesn't really follow at all what we were just talking about. V'od zos, ha'isa Yerushalayim yiseira al Yavneh. Not only that, but Yerushalayim was greater than everyone else. Also, shekal Yerushalayim ro'a v'shama'as u'krova v'yechola lavo, token. What does this have to do with anything between Yerushalayim and Yavne? The Gemara seems to say here that Kol Yir Shehira V'Shamas Ukrova V'Yechola Lavo, any city that was close enough and within far enough distance, close enough distance to Yerushalayim, they would blow. V'Yavne Lo Yitoken Al V'Bezdin Bovat. So that's a strange statement. We'll have to get back to that in the coming weeks. Exactly what does that line in the Mishnah mean to tell us? Fine. So as of now, we have the original halacha is Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos. Only in the Beis HaMikdash they blew shofar, but everywhere else they did not. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai changed things around once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but basically we're working, forget about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai for now, we're working on the basis of Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos, you don't blow shofar. Rosh Hashanah that falls out during the week, you do blow shofar like the Torah tells you. Says the Gemara, Minani Mili, how do you know to draw such a distinction? How do you know that when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, you're not supposed to blow shofar? And when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, sorry, did I say it backwards? When Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, you don't blow shofar. When Rosh Hashanah falls out during the week, you do. How do you know that that's true? Amar Rab Levi Bar Lachma, very unusual name, Lachma. Amar Rab Chama Bar Chanina, Kasev Echad Omer, one pasuk says, with reference to Rosh Hashanah, and the nature of the mitzvah of blowing the shofar, one pasuk says, Shabbason, it's a yamtiv, Zichron Shua, which means you're supposed to remind yourself of the blowing of the shofar. V'kasev Echad Omer, and another pasuk says, Yom Shua Yelachem, you have to actually be involved in the mitzvah blowing the shofar proper. So what does it mean? Is it a day that I'm supposed to remind myself of the shofar, or is it a day that I'm actually supposed to be blowing the shofar for real? Says the Gemara, Lo Kasha. You're right, you have a stira. One pasuk seems to say that you blow the shofar, one pasuk seems to say that you don't. The answer is, Kam b'yamtiv shechalios b'Shabbos. This is talking about a case where Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, and that's what the pasuk means, Zichron Shua. You don't blow the shofar on Shabbos itself. It's just a day to remind yourself of the blowing of the shofar activity. But Kam b'yamtiv shechalios b'chol. the rest of the times when Yom Tov, when Rosh Hashanah falls out during the week, so then we categorize that in the Pasuk as a Yom Teruah. That's the day that you actually blow the shofar. So that's why the Pasuk gives two different ways of referring to Rosh Hashanah. Sometimes you refer to it as a Zichron Teruah. Sometimes we refer to it as a Yom Teruah, because sometimes it falls out on Shabbos and sometimes it falls out during the week. Very good. Says the Gemara, that is not a satisfying answer at all. Amar Rava, if that's correct, that you mean to tell me that the Torah itself draws a distinction between Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah that falls out during the week, if you're telling me that midaraisa on Shabbos you're not supposed to be blowing shofar for whatever reason, so how can you draw a distinction and say, well, you're right, when it's on Shabbos and it's in the Beis HaMikdash, so then you blow shofar, but if it's outside of the Beis HaMikdash and it's Shabbos, then you don't blow shofar? The Torah doesn't say that. So how does our Mishnah get to this conclusion here if you're learning it simply, strictly from the Psukim? That doesn't make any sense. V'yoda, not only that, Rashi here has a different gear, so whatever it is, don't we know that malachahi de itzrich krala mu'ute? When you're talking about what you are or are not allowed to do on Shabbos or Yom Tov, the Pasuk says, lo sasu kol malacha, you're not allowed to violate a malacha. Does it mean I'm not allowed to tie my shoes? No, that's not a malacha. Does it mean I'm not allowed to get a fly off of my forehead? That's not a malacha. Why does the Torah have to tell me, no, that you're allowed to do? Of course you're allowed to do that. The Torah only asked you from doing malacha. This was never a malacha in the first place. So over here, why would the Torah have to go out of its way to say that you're not allowed to do this on Shabbos? What do you mean? Lab malacha, it's not a malacha. The Torah says, don't do a malacha savoda, some constructive kind of work. Blowing a shofar is not a constructive act. You're not doing a malacha. So that never would have been included in the Isser of Shabbos at all. So what? How does that get into the discussion here? That, again, you have to be a Baal Tokeya, you have to know how to blow the shofar, but that's not called a malacha, that's not a constructive act. So why do you need the psukim to describe here whether or not you're allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbos? Has nothing to do with a malacha. Either it's not a malacha and you shouldn't be able to violate, or it is a malacha and you're not allowed to, but why does the Torah have to talk about this at all? So says the Gemara, Ela Marava, you're right. Scratch everything we said. Really, on a biblical level, if you just read the psukim, we know the halacha is midaraisa mishra shari. Of course, whether Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos or it falls out during the week, you always blow the shofar on a biblical level. Why not? It's not a malacha. No reason why the Torah would have answered it on Shabbos. This whole thing is just a din de rabbanan. Rabbanan hu de gazerbei. The rabbanan, the chachamim, were the ones who came in and got involved, which is amazing. Which is so amazing. You see the kalach of Chazal. You see the power vested in the Chachamim of any given generation, that they have the ability to actually change the Din HaTorah. The Din HaTorah is you're supposed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And the Chachamim came along and said, no, we are going to get in the way of what the Torah said, and we're going to tell you that when it falls out under these circumstances, you shouldn't do that. It's a surprising assumption that our Gemara makes, but the Gemara says, why did the Chachamim say that one should not blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it falls out on Shabbos? So the Gemara here has the famous concept that we're afraid, Shema Yavirenu Daladamas. Maybe you're going to go ahead because you're going to come to shul, and you didn't really prepare adequately, you didn't prepare properly, and maybe you're going to come to violate the Isra of Hotza on Shabbos because you're going to go to the teacher to teach you how to properly blow the shofar. So that's what the Gemara says. And the Maskana, our Gemara tells us that really if it was just up to the Psukim and Chumash, I would have said, of course it's mutter to blow the shofar on Shabbos. But since Midirabbanan, they had a concern that maybe you're going to carry the shofar outside in order to learn how to blow it, so therefore they said you should abstain from blowing the shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, and that's the Maskana of Gemara. But the glaring omission of the Gemara is, as the Chasam Sofer and all the other Acharonim on our daf and all over the place point out, how do you explain what's with the two psukim? The whole Gemara started off with a problem. On the one hand, we have a pasuk that says Yom Teruah. On the other hand, we have a pasuk that says Zichron Teruah. The Gemara first wants to say, well, no, this pasuk is talking about when it's on Shabbos, this pasuk is talking about when it's during the week. The Gemara answers, no. On a biblical level, everybody agrees that you blow the shofar on Shabbos. Only the Chacham came along. Knew if it's only Din D'Rabbanan, how do you explain the Pshat and the Psukim? What does the Pasuk mean here? The Pasuk says Zichron Shua. What's that referring to? Very obvious Kasha. But the Gemara doesn't discuss it. Should have been Rashi's question on the Daf. Should have been Tosis Kasha. Nobody talks about it. All the Achronim are bothered. What happened to the basic premise, the basic question that the Gemara started with? How do you explain the two Psukim? The Maskana says Gemara, we don't have an answer. So the Ksav Sofer writes a very simple answer, very pragmatic. He says, well, when it says Zichron Shua, That's because I would have thought we have some mitzvahs in the Torah that are mitzvah shebeguf, that everybody has to do. So I can't ask you to put on tefillin for me. I can't ask you to shake the lulav for me. So I would have thought that I don't have the ability to ask you to blow the shofar for me either. Each person, yom tshua yelachem, means every person has to count svira, every person has to shake the lulav, every person has to wear tefillin, means every person also has to blow the shofar on their own. Kamash Malan, the pasuk says, no, we have two ways of understanding the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar on Rosh Hashanah. On the one hand, it's a yom tshua, yes, somebody has to blow shofar, but at the same time, it's a zichron tshua. For the rest of us sitting in the community, sitting in the shul, we can just listen along, we don't have to blow on our own. That's the ksav sofer says, very simple. That's the way to understand the psukim, because otherwise, he says, I don't understand, the Gemara just left us hanging here, how do you interpret both of these psukim? Again, it's a very simple pshat in the pasuk, but that's what he suggests. But here, what I want to study tonight is Rabbi Yosef Engel gives an answer. Rabbi Yosef Engel was such a genius. Everything Rabbi Yosef Engel wrote or said was just absolutely brilliant and so sharp. So here Rabbi Yosef Engel gives us a very novel approach to answer this question. And in his novel approach, I think it opens up a vista of conversation and discussion about a very broad topic that is important to keep in mind in other areas of learning Gemara as well. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel as follows. Really, our Gemara says here that the Chacham were the ones who came along and said, Shema Yavirenu. When Shabbos falls out, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, you're not allowed to blow the shofar because we're concerned. Maybe you're going to carry outside. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, Moshe Rabbeinu already was the one who instituted that takana. Moshe Rabbeinu, in the time when he wrote the Torah, when he gave us the Torah, and he wrote the word Zichron Shua, you know why he wrote that? Because the first year when the Torah was given, Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, well, in a normal year, you have a mitzvah of Yom Shua Yelachem. But this year, because I don't want you to carry the shofar and violate the Yisra of Hotzah, so Moshe Rabbeinu himself wrote in the Torah, Zichron Shua, because that's what they did. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, Moshe Rabbeinu already knew, and the Torah already set up in the system that there might come a time when Rosh Hashanah is going to fall out on Shabbos, and the Torah itself was concerned that maybe someone's going to come to violate the Yisra of Hotzah. Therefore the Torah says, some years, Zichron Shua is the way to go. Very surprising comment of the of Rabbi Yosef Engel, but that's what he says, which opens up a major Pandora's box in a number of reasons. Number one, Rabbi Yosef Engel himself asks on himself that our Gemara says that even when you have the Gzeira, even when you say you're not allowed to blow shofar on Shabbos, you're allowed to blow shofar in the Beis HaMikdash. Why are you allowed to blow shofar in the Beis HaMikdash? Because since our whole concern about not blowing shofar on Shabbos is maybe you're going to carry it, the Gemara assumes that the Beis HaMikdash, no one's going to make such a mistake. You have the Kohanim there, you have all the Sanhedrin there, nobody's going to make such a mistake when you have such great tzaddikim around. So, Moshe Rabbeinu was less than the Kohanim of the Beis HaMikdash? What kind of pshat is this? How do you say that? Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who's blowing the shofar on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. And you're going to tell me that we're concerned maybe Moshe Rabbeinu or the Baal Tokei in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu is going to make a mistake? So Rabbi Yosef Engel ends off and he says, yeah, V'yei Shlomar. V'yei Shlomar what? What kind of answer is that? I don't understand. What's V'yei Shlomar? V'yei Shlomar, I think it's a major kasha on everything you just said. So I don't know. I think he leaves us hanging a little bit. It's a very difficult answer to say, but I think it opens up what? A breakaway minion. It could be. Could be. I don't know. So again, whether or not Rabbi Yosef Engel happens to be correct in explaining our Gemara is a halbitzar. But I think what's important to be aware of is the following. Rabbi Yosef Engel here is making an assumption, which he talks about at length in one of his svarim, and I think it's important to be aware of. Let's look at the Tashbetz. Rabbi Yosef Engel does not quote this Tashbetz, but it's important to begin our conversation. The Tashbetz was one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, lived in the 1300s, one of the Spanish Gedolei HaRishonim. So the Tashbetz writes in his Tshuva Sefer, commenting on the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara says that 7 days before Yom Kippur, they would take the Kohen Gadol and separate him, that nobody else should be next to him. Why? What's the problem? Why shouldn't he be with his wife? What was the issue? What's going to happen if he's with his wife? So I would have said, maybe his wife will become a Nida unexpectedly, and who knows, he's going to become disqualified. Says the Tashbetz as follows. Re'isicha mischazek. I see that you believe, Shaprishas Kohen Gadol mibeso hu min haTorah. He's responding to one of his contemporaries, and he says, I see that you're of the opinion that the reason why the Kohen Gadol used to separate from his wife 7 days before Yom Kippur is because the Torah said he has to separate. You think it's a din d'oraisa. V'lo yafe ata oseh bazeh. You're making up stories. You're wrong. That's not a din d'oraisa. How do I know it's not a din d'oraisa, says the Tashbetz? She'im min haTorah haya asur lo kol shiva. If your assumption is correct that min haTorah, the Torah says, he is not allowed to be with his wife those 7 days leading up to Yom Kippur, if he would violate it, hayaloke aleha, he would get malchus. If he goes and decides to go out for a walk with his wife during that week, we would give him malchus. But yet, what does he say? Lo manua b'chlal halokim mishumakum. You look through the Rambam, you look through all the Rishonim, through all the Gemara. The Gemara says, Elohein halokim. These are the people who get malchus. Nowhere in that list do we find Kohen Gadol during the 7 days before Yom Kippur. If he violates the din of being with his wife, he gets malchus. How come he's not in the list? If you say it's a din d'arais, if you say it's a real Isser Torah, that should be in the list of one who gets malchus. Says the Tashbetz, unacceptable to say that that's a din d'arais. Absolutely not. That's reason number one, because otherwise there would be malchus and he should be listed with everybody else. But number two, and more fundamentally, says the Tashbetz, it cannot be. Why? He says, because the Gemara itself, when it says, why were they mafresh the Kohen Gadol from his wife 7 days before Yom Kippur? The Gemara asked the question. Asked the question we just asked. So the Gemara says, Shema Timsa Ishto Nida. Maybe his wife is going to unexpectedly have a Rias Dam Nida, and then he's going to come Tame, then he's not going to be able to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur. So you're telling me that the Gemara gives me a reason as to why we don't allow the Kohen Gadol to be with his wife. And you're saying that that reason is an Isser Torah? You're saying the Torah was afraid that maybe his wife is going to become a Nida? You're saying the Torah was warning him? That's why the Torah set up the Isser, says the Tashbetz. That's unreasonable. Ein HaTorah Oseres Mishum Shema. The Torah never says, don't do this because maybe it will lead you to do something else. The Torah gives us absolute violations of what we are, what we're not allowed to do. Don't eat Basar B'chalav. It doesn't say because maybe if you eat Basar B'chalav, it's going to lead to something else. No, no, we don't say that. It says, don't do the violation, don't do the act. Let's say Bishalakum. Bishalakum is a Isser Darais or Isser Darabanan. Isser Darabanan. So the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, why did the Chacham come along and Asar Bishalakum? What's the problem? It's not because we assume he's going to cook non-kosher food. Let's say it's in my house, I provide all the ingredients. The answer is, Mishim Chasnus, because Benoseyem, because maybe you're going to marry their children, maybe you're going to marry into them, whatever it might be. The Gemara says all these reasons. So it's clear that that's only Nisa Durabana. I got a Shaila last night. I don't know, I think it's a Milsa de Pshita, I don't know. This email that I got. And could be I responded to the person a little disrespectfully because I just thought it was nothing to talk about, but okay, and I apologize if he's listening. I didn't mean to. But he responded to me also, but I think it's still incorrect. This person wrote to me, not from this community, I don't think, that I don't know who he is, but he writes to me all the time. So this person wrote to me that... it's great. I don't know, I assume he's a follower online. So this person wrote to me that, what's the halacha if you have somebody, a Jewish woman who's married to a non-Jewish man? Is there an Isser Bishalakum for the husband to cook for the wife? So I thought this is... what? Oh, so I'm like wondering, what's he talking about? So he explains it to me. So he says, the lamdas is because, why should there be an Isser Mishum Chasnas? They're already married. And if you're going to say the Isser is Mishum Benoseyem, because maybe the children, all their children are going to be Jewish. Because the wife is a Jew. So he says, maybe we should rely on Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam has the opinion that when it's Bebeis Oshala Yisrael, when it's in a Jewish home, some Rishonim are of the opinion that Bishalakim doesn't apply in a Jewish home. Again, we don't accept that Rabbeinu Tam at all. But he wanted to say, maybe under these circumstances, so what? I wrote back to him, what are you, crazy? We're going to be makel for somebody who's intermarried? To rely on Rabbeinu Tam? Because I didn't understand the story. So I said, what are you talking about? So he writes back to me, he clarified the story a little bit. He says, no, these people are married for a long time. And now, you have somebody who's married for a long time, and one of the woman became a balas tshuva, and she's still living with the non-Jewish husband because they were married for 40 years before that, or 50 years before that, or 30 years before that. And now, all of a sudden, she's religious, and she finds out that a religious person is not really allowed to be married to a non-Jew, but she didn't divorce her husband because they've been married for such a long time. Now the shaila is, can the husband make his wife breakfast? Or... they have a lot of people over for Shabbos. He happens to help out in the kitchen. So this was the shot. So again, you're getting caught up on the details about what the svar of the halacha is and whether Benoseyem applies or not. First of all, it's a milsa, the pshita, the Pischei Tshuva writes in Yeridea, that what about the komrim? What about if I'm going to take food that's cooked by a non-Jew, but he's a priest? And the priest, as we know, swear to celibacy. So they're never going to get married. unless he's going to go off the derech. He's going to become, you know, he's going to, whatever. But the priest, if he follows in the faith of the way he's supposed to be acting, he's never going to get married. So maybe you'll say you're allowed to eat his food because Mishum B'Nosayim doesn't apply. And Mishum Chasmus doesn't apply. There's nothing to worry about. Piskei Tshuva says, no, it's a low plug, we assume. Bishul Akam is Bishul Akam, doesn't matter. Certainly in this case. That is the Isser, Mishum Chasnus. You're enabling the couple to continue to be married by living in such a way, by allowing the husband to cook for his wife, by allowing him to be a functioning person in the house. It means they're not going to have an impetus to get divorced or to be Megayer. Milsa de Pshita. I don't think there's anything to talk about. But anyway, that just is on my mind while we talk about this, in case you didn't notice. But I called my father last night, late last night, like 1 o'clock in the morning. I said to him, am I crazy? You know, like, am I wrong? He's like, what are you, like, of course you're not wrong. You know, like, so it was good. He doesn't always agree. So this one he did. So anyway, so here the Tashbetz writes that when we talk about Isurei Torah, the Torah doesn't give us, don't do this because maybe it'll lead to that. Bishul Akam is a Din D'Rabbanan. Why is Bishul Akam a Din D'Rabbanan? Because maybe it's going to lead to the next step. But an Isur Torah is absolute. Isur Torah is not contingent upon something else. It's an absolute Isur. And he says, V'chal makam shenosin tam shema. Anytime, that's the code word. Anytime the Gemara discusses, you're not allowed to do this because it will lead to something else. That's the code word that we're dealing with a Din D'Rabbanan. If it was a Din D'Araisa, so you don't have a shema. You don't say, oh, don't do this because of X. Don't do this because of what? Tashbetz thinks it's unreasonable to make such an assumption. You look a little further. In Siman Kuf Lamed Vav, the Tashbetz says once again, Umashir Bisa Reim Sheishi Surei Torah Sheim Mishum Shema. He says, ah, you ganged up on me and you found all these strange cases where the Torah says, oh, don't do this because of that. Says the Tashbetz, Vehevesa, and you brought proofs from the Psukim that say, Pen Yachtiu, don't do this because maybe your children are going to go off, Pen Yosef, or Lo Yosef Levavo, the king is not allowed to marry too many wives because maybe it's going to lead him to that, Velo Yashiv, Kulomedi Shakarim, what are you talking about, says the Tashbetz, it's ridiculous, you can't say such a thing. Isurei Torah, absolute Isurim. That's it, that's the rule that he draws for us. Vehanu Lavi Yisera Ninu Lechai Velav B'Shnei Lav, and all those examples that you gave, okay, he has a way of getting out of them, but bottom line, says the Tashbetz, you cannot assume such a thing. Now, one notable exception that everybody would agree to is what the Shemi Shmuel points out from the Reb Simcha Bunim B'Pshischa. It's a strange Mar Makam, but the Shemi Shmuel points it out, and I think it's a good point to remind yourselves of. Shekol Archakas Hemid Rabbanan. Yes, it's true. Every time the Torah says, every time the Gemara describes something that is usser because it might lead to something else, it's a code word for being the Rabbanan. However, he says, the one notable exception is Midvar Sheker Tirchak. And over there he says, Zulas Baveris Hasheker Shagam Harachaka Hi Daraisa. Over there it says, Tirchak, stay far away from Sheker, because if you get even close to it, you're going to get to the Yisr itself. That's the only exception, because we know it's all true. That says, Reb Simcha Bunim Mipshischa, even if you assume that the Torah is only absolute and doesn't give you things to warn you about not leading to other things, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, we all know if you don't stay far enough away from it, somehow you're going to get sucked in, even on the smallest level. But that's what he writes. So, this is the assumption of the Tashbetz. However, Reb Yosef Engel takes major issue with that assumption, and he thinks it's completely incorrect. Yosef Engel has a lot of amazing svarim, but one of them was the Sefer Lekach Tov. And the Sefer Lekach Tov is a long, long piece where he writes that he proves from many, many different sources that this is not the case. That the Torah in many places does show us that, even built into the system itself, the Torah will say something is not permissible on a level of Daraisa because, not because it's an absolute issue, but because it will lead you to do something else. For example, he writes as follows. In the Avos Rab Nasan, number Gimel. Commenting on the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, Hasus Yag LaTor. We have a communal obligation, and the Chovas HaLevavos and the Mesilas Yesharim, right? It's not only a Chachamim's obligation to make Hachakas for us, but it's every individual's obligation. If I feel I have a problem with Arayas, so I have to make Hachaka for myself. If I feel I have a problem with money, and it's very enticing for me to, you know, cut corners and steal from other people, even if it's a little bit shady, I have to make a hachaka for myself. Not only does Chazal have to set up a system for me, I have to set up a system for myself. Says the Avos Rab Nasan. Asu siyag l'Torah, asay siyag l'dvarecha. You should make a siyag for yourself. Kederech she'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu siyag l'dvarav. You should be just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just like He set up a system. And He set up safeguards that we should not fall. So too we should do the same. Adam HaRishon asa siyag l'dvarav. Adam HaRishon also realized it was very enticing. He decided he was going to make a gather for himself. Torah asa sasyag l'dvareha. The Torah also. Now, can't get clearer than that. Here the Avos Rab Nasan writes, Torah asa sasyag l'dvareha. The Torah didn't want to lead you to do other things that would be worse, so therefore it put up a safeguard for you. Moshe asa sasyag l'dvareha. Af iyo v'anavim. Okay, after the three dots. So Ezu Siag Shalas Torah Ledvara asked Davis to Rab Nassan, where do you find that the Torah makes a hachaka? Where do you find that the Torah says this is aser, not because it's absolutely aser, but because we're concerned it's going to lead you to do something worse? Harehi Walmer, it says, Vel Isha Meninas Tumasa Lo Sikrav, it says a man is not allowed to be Nikrav to his wife, he's not allowed to be close to his wife, Benidas Tumasa, at the time of the month that she is impure. Yachal Yichab Kena V'yinash Kena V'yidabri Ma Dvar Metelim. You might think, well, Lo Sikrav just means I'm not allowed to have relations with her. But who said I'm not allowed to have chibuk v'nishuk? Who said I'm not allowed to be very endearing to my wife in a physical way? Tamalama lo sikrav. Torah says, you're not even allowed to get close. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't speak to her. It just means you're not allowed to physically get close. Yachol tishan ima bibigadeh alamita. So I'm going to follow all the rules. She's going to wear her clothing. I'm going to wear my clothing. She's going to have her own blanket. I'm going to have my own blanket. But back in the days when they only had one bed, why can't I sleep with her in the bed? What's the problem? Says the Torah, lo sikrav. No. Ma'isa ba'adam echad shekara harbi v'shana harbi v'shimash tamina chacham harbi. There was a tzaddik, a talmud chacham, who went ahead and was learning his whole life. Umeis b'chatzi yamav, he dies young, suddenly. Ba'isa ishto no tell us tfilav. His wife took his tefillin. V'chozeres b'bate k'nesiyas b'bate midrasha. She was going around to all the shuls, to all the yeshivas. Ba'isa tzoaka subocha. She was crying out to everyone she could see, and she said to them, v'amra lahem, and she says to them, rabotai, Ksiv Basrei, doesn't it say, I'm sorry, doesn't it say in the Torah, Kihu Chayecha Barachemecha, if you sit and learn Torah, you're going to have an Arichas Yamin. And yet, my husband, who sat and spent his whole life learning Torah, and he was Shivish Tamil Chachamim, Mipnei Ma Meis Bechatzi Yamav, what happened to him? The Torah promises he's going to have a long life. What happened to him? So, La Haya Adam Sheheshav La Davar, who's going to respond? Who knows what to say? Nobody knows what to say. Pamnes Damin La Eliyoza Chalatov. One fine day, she's, you know, walking around with these tefillin, and she's crying out, and she bumps into Eliyahu HaNavi. So why not? Let's ask him. Amar Allah, so Eliyahu HaNavi turns to her and he says, B.T., Mipnei ma'ad bocha v'tzoekes. Why are you crying? What's the problem? So she says, Amar Allah, Rebbe, Bali kara harbi v'shana harbi v'shimash tachmini chacham harbi umeis b'chatzi yam. What's going on? My husband was such a big tzaddik, he sat and learned his whole life, and yet he died young. How'd that happen? Amar Allah, so Eliyahu HaNavi says, well, let's think about it. You think he was such a big tzaddik? Slow down. Let's go through it a little bit. Let's remind ourselves of the way he lived his life. Kisha'at benida sach. When you were a nida, kolosan gimel yama harishon ma'u etzlecha. How did he treat you the first 3 days of when you were a nida? Amar Allah, Rebbe, chas v'shalom. Eliyahu HaNavi, what a chutzpah. How do you talk about my husband this way? You think he didn't know the Shulchan Aruch? You think he didn't know the psukim? You think he got near me when I was a nida? Chas v'shalom shalom nagabi afilu be'etzba katana shalom. He didn't touch me at all. He knew I was a nida. Kalos ani yama achronu ma'u etzlecha. What about the end of the cycle? What was he then? Meaning, right before you got your period, what was the story then? Amar lo, Rebbe, achalti imo, shasisi imo, yashanti imo, bebigdi almita, ubisara nagabi besara. We were very close. What's the problem? Why shouldn't he be? I wasn't a nida at the time. Amalei Baruch HaMakom Sheharaga. Eliyahu Navi says he deserved to die. Why did he deserve to lose his life? Shekein Kasev BaTorah Ve'El Isha Menidas Tumasa Lo Sikrav. Now, this doesn't mean anyone who violates an Isser of Nida, of Negia, whatever, is right to die. That's not what the Medrash comes to tell us here. It's not what the Alistair of Nassan is getting at. It's talking about this person that was such an high Madregi. You want to know, after all the tzidkas, after all the learning and everything, you want to know why he lost his life? So Eliyahu Navi gives a reason. But here, the Avos Rav Nosson clearly states that the reason why the Torah said lo sikrav, the reason why the Torah said you're not allowed to do acts of chibuk v'nishuk when one's wife is anida is because that will lead to something worse. So here, says Rav Yosef Engel, you have a clear indication where the Avos Rav Nosson tells us that there is such a concept called a siyag d'araisa. Not every time that we have an isser, and the reason for the issur is because it's going to lead to something worse. Not every time is that a clear indication that it's only an issur d'rabbanan. Sometimes it could be even an issur d'oraisa. You go a little further. We have the Ran in the very first page in Pesachim. The Ran on the Rif writes, why is it that we have a mitzvah b'dikas chametz? Why is it that we go so far out of control and we say, b'yirah, b'yimatzeh, come on, what's going to happen already? B'yirah, b'yimatzeh, what's the big deal? So you have some Cheerios on the floor, what, you're not going to eat it? It's behind the bookshelf. Well, I'm not going to eat it. What's the problem? Says the Ran. How come I don't have to go around my house and maybe start checking? Maybe I have some chazer in the back of the fridge? Maybe I have some... What do you mean? How come I don't have to start doing that? Every night I should check around the house to make sure the babysitter didn't leave anything that I didn't ask her to bring in. We don't have to do that. So why is it when it comes to bedikas chametz you have to start walking around the house? V'lo samcho al abitul. Kvar kasavti, says the Ran, she'asu ken kedei lekayim mitzvos tashbisu. The reason why you have to do that is because we have a mitzvah of tashbisu, she'chashashu levnei adam shelo yivalu b'machshavas on the gami. So you have to do bir chametz because people, when we tell them to do a bitul b'leiv, a bitul b'hirur, they're not going to do it properly, so therefore you have to make sure you get rid of it. V'imata omer she'chashashu shelo yavala achlo, u'chadivri arishonim. He says, and there also is a concern that maybe someone's going to come to eat the chametz, because after all, we're very used to eating chametz all year long. So we're not concerned if you see a piece of chazer that says on it, bacon, ham, whatever, we're not concerned you're going to eat it. You never eat that during the year. But we are concerned that maybe on Pesach, when you're used to eating chametz all year long, maybe you're going to fall in on Pesach as well. Therefore, says the Ran, since on Pesach you have an iser that you're not used to, and we're concerned that you're going to come to eat the chametz, therefore therefore the Torah itself said, Bayirah Bayimatzeh. What does that mean? The Ran is coming to teach us that Bayirah Bayimatzeh is not an independent iser that is a value on its own. It's not an absolute iser. It's an iser that's contingent on the eating. And since we're concerned that maybe you're going to come to eat the chametz on Pesach because you don't know how to stay away from chametz because it's what you're used to all year, therefore we said you have to also have an iser of Bayirah Bayimatzeh written in the Torah itself. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, you see clearly that the Ran is of the opinion that it's possible to have an iser in the Torah that is not an absolute iser. It's an iser in the Torah that is only what we classify as a siyag d'araisa. The Torah set up a system in order that you shouldn't fall deeper into the problem, that you shouldn't fall to the eating of the chametz itself, which would be an iser kares. So that's what the Ran... That's what the Ran suggests here on Maseches Pesachim in explaining why specifically here by chametz we have a violation of Bayirah Bayimatzeh, which we don't find by anything else. You have the Kesef Mishnah writes by Bishul Basar B'Chalav. Why do I have a prohibition to cook Basar B'Chalav? It says, Lo Sabasho Gadiba Chalev Imo. I would have said, what do you mean, why do I have a prohibition? Why do I have a prohibition to talk Lashon Hara? Why do I have a prohibition to do anything? The answer is because the Torah said so. Says the Kesef Mishnah, no. The reason why the Torah said you're not allowed to cook Basar B'Chalav is because really the Torah doesn't want you to eat Basar B'Chalav. If you're going to start cooking Basar B'Chalav and having it in the house, if you're going to start cooking Basar B'Chalav and leaving it around the kitchen, somebody's going to come by and nibble it, even though it says on it that it's for the neighbor, it says on it it's for my coworker, it's for somebody else. No. But we're concerned if you're going to start cooking it in the house, you're going to end up coming to eat it as well. And that's the real violation. So there, once again, the Kesef Mishnah writes that we have this concept of a siyag d'araisa as well. Here, Rabbi Yosef Engel finally quotes a Yalkut Shimoni. Ma'u v'yichal alokim ayam ha'shvi. What does it mean? A very famous Yalkut Shimoni. What does it mean, v'yichal alokim ayam ha'shvi? God finished all the creation of the world on the Yom HaShvi. Like somebody who takes a hammer and slams it down onto a slab of wood or whatever it might be. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu picks up the creative hand while it was still day, and the moment it became Shabbos, he put his hands down and everything was done. Okay. Says the Medrash, Basar v'dam she'eni yodea lo ita v'lo gurga v'lo sha'osav. Human beings that don't have an ability to be so exact, so meticulous, so precise in the way they measure time, we need to be most of Mechal al HaKodesh. We need to have the institution of Tosefes Shabbos. However, the Ribono Shel Olam, Sheyodea, Regav, Ve'ita, V'Sha'osav, God knows how to be so precise, so exact, so meticulous, Nichnas Bo Kechut HaSara. It says, the second Shabbos started, the Ribono Shel Olam right away went into Shabbos, and the moment before that, he was still doing melacha, he was still in the shower. But we're not able to do that. Why? Because we don't know how to so carefully measure our time, and therefore we assume, says the Medrash, that a person has to take upon themselves Tosefes Shabbos, because otherwise it's going to lead them to do melacha on Shabbos itself. Here, once again, you have an example of what we call a Siyag D'Araisa, which I think, just getting back, we don't have to give more examples, there are many more to talk about, but Rabbi Yosef Engel there has a very, very long argument where he says that we do find many examples, many precedents throughout the Rishonim, throughout the Gemara, that we have various Isurim which are not absolute Isurim. And although they are Isurim that are counted as the Taryak Mitzvahs, although they are written in Chumash, although they are really Isurim that we all read in the Chumash on a simple level, but says Rabbi Yosef Engel, they are really contingent Isurim. The Torah only safeguarded you from violating something that is far worse. So therefore, I think once you have the context of what Rabbi Yosef Engel argues in another place, so now you understand what his comment is over here. Again, we had a problem in our Gemara. Rabbi Yosef Engel and many other Achronim pointed out, the Gemara starts off with a question. The Gemara says, we have one pasuk by Rosh Hashanah that says Zichron Shua. We have another pasuk by Rosh Hashanah that says Yom Shua Yelachem. So what does it mean? How do you explain both of those pesukim? Says the Gemara, you're right. One is Rosh Hashanah Shechalis B'Shabbos, one is Rosh Hashanah Shechalis B'Chol. Ask the Gemara, what do you mean? That seems to be only a Dindur Rabbanan. Why? Because when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, you're not allowed to blow the shofar because we're concerned maybe you're going to go and carry it outside in the street. That's a Dindur Rabbanan. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, no, that's the answer. Moshe Rabbeinu already in the Torah said that the Torah set up the halacha to be that way because the Torah itself was concerned that when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, we don't want you blowing the shofar because the Torah itself is concerned maybe you're going to carry the shofar into Rishus HaRabim and violate the Yisud HaRais of Hutzah. So I think that whole answer of Yosef Engel is only predicated on the fact that he himself argued that there is such a thing. Half of the Rishonim say, there's no such a mention. You can't say there's a Isser in the Torah that's contingent on something else. So how can you interpret a Pasuk to say like that? How can you say the Pasuk of Zichron Shua Yelachem is saying, on a biblical level we are told, don't blow the shofar on Shabbos that fall on Rosh Hashanah Shechalis B'Shabbos because we're concerned, maybe it's going to lead you to something else. You can't say that's a pshat in the Pasuk according to, let's say, the Tashbetz that we mentioned, who says, how did he start off, what was his Lashon? What does he say? Edei Shekerim. He says, ridiculous, you can't say such a thing. So if you assume like that, Rabbi Yosef Engel's whole answer is out the window. But Rabbi Yosef Engel himself, who in another place argues the point and argues this thesis that he has, that there is such an idea, there is such a concept of a siyag d'araisa, so it makes sense where Rabbi Yosef Engel himself tries to say that pshat over here in explaining the two psukim. Now,
why would it be that the Rabban appeared that the Rabban come up with that novel concept? I mean, how does he explain that?
How does he explain, meaning what's pshat that the Gemara says the Chacham came up with it? So you have to say that it means Chazer V'Tiknu, meaning this was already in the times of then, and then the Chacham later on reminded us of what the Pasuk means. It's a stretch. The whole thing is a big stretch. But I think it brings out a very interesting point. Now what I just want to mention is the Yerushalmi here in the beginning of the fourth parak in Rosh Hashanah also has this discussion. We have Zichron Shua and we have Yom Shua. And the Yerushalmi answers, yes, this is when Shabbos falls out, when Rosh Hashanah Shechalis B'Shabbos. This is when Rosh Hashanah falls out during the week. That sounds very much like what Rabbi Yosef Engel is saying. Right? Because otherwise, how does the Yerushalmi end off? What do you mean? How can you say the Maskanas HaGemara according to the Yerushalmi is that, yeah, one Pasuk Zichron Shua is talking about when Rosh Hashanah falls out during the week, one Pasuk is talking about when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. That's a very surprising Yerushalmi. But either way, I think in general the Rabbi Yosef Engel might be very hard to accept in general when it comes to the Pshat in our Gemara because he has so many other questions. Again, as we mentioned before, our Gemara itself says, even when you say that you're not allowed to blow shofar on Shabbos, that's only outside of the Beis HaMikdash. If I'm in the Beis HaMikdash itself, we're not concerned. Why? Because we say that Kohanim's Rizimim, we say we have a Bezdin here, everybody's going to know how to follow the laws properly, everybody's going to know how to follow the Halacha, no one's going to fall in. So what, in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, it was so much different. In the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, they didn't know how to follow the Halacha properly. So again, Rabbi Yosef Engel is bothered with the Kasha, he ends off with a Yesh Lomar, he doesn't tell us what the answer is. I don't know, I guess you got to be Rabbi Yosef Engel to come up with the answer for that. But either way, I think this is just a very fascinating discussion in the first place about whether a siyag d'araisa is even a possibility to even discuss in the first place. Yeah. Oh, lav malacha, right. What do you do with that?